A chap called what, sorry?
There was a chap called Leif Barley. They're nearly all dead and gone now. A lot of old guys dead and gone. There's one or two left.
Right. So how many were there?
When it were in its full bloom, how many were there? Digging. Maybe about 25.
Yeah.
Maybe, because that were Thorn side and Rawcliffe side. Maybe 25. Might be more. Might be more. And you used to dig all winter, say from end of September to about end of March, and then you used to do your dry work.
Yeah, it's open.
Like I showed you, that walling, pyramiding, and stacking. That we call that dry work. And then when you finish your dry work, say it got to September or October, you got your tools out and you started digging again for winter.
Yeah.
The other tour I took in today.
And Mrs. Hibbert's been telling me about, was it 1963 when it was frozen?
Yeah. Brian, we lived in an old house just there. Brian was about 8, and it was a very bad winter, 63, one of bad winters in my time anyway, and it started, 1963 winter started, Boxing Day 62, it come very, very cold, and it froze night and day, for 14 weeks it froze. It never snowed, it just froze. And the peat was solid, like a solid block. So we had to go on the dole for about 14 weeks. And then they called us back 18th of March at 64. And then it was two.
March 63?
No, 63 when it froze.
Wait, she's right. Wait a minute.
He said it was Boxing Day 62.
Yeah, 63 that was. You started back. We started back up moors March the 18th, 63.
I can't remember that.
We couldn't dig the peat, so what they got us doing, digging trees up. They wanted the trees out of the way so they could go in and dig it. You couldn't dig it amongst trees. So in the winter time they were digging trees up, chucking them on lumps, and then you could go in after that.
Do you mean the trees that were growing? Yeah,
silver birch. And them silver birch up moors, you've seen them like a tassel, the seeds they grow, aren't they? Thousands, aren't they? Well, they're all full of seeds, them, and they just shake, and with peat being soft, they don't have grown millions. Well, if it's on hard ground, you just get one or two. But peat, on it like.
Can I take you back to when you started? Now, can I just ask you where you were born?
Morens, Barnsley Road, 84, Barnsley Road.
And do you mind telling me when?
When I was born, I was born July the 29th, 1933. And I was born down Barnsley Road, 84 Barnsley Road, when my mum lost her eldest daughter called Minnie with meningitis. So it upset her, so we moved from 84 to 94, 5 hours up, because her nerves had come with losing her daughter, you see. And that's where I was born, Barnsley Road. Radigan, did you know the pit before they knocked it down? Radigan there.
Oh, right.
We used to jump our railings and we were on swings. Yeah, Barnsley Road.
What did your dad do?
A miner for 50 years.
Did you think of going down pit then?
No. Me, had two brothers, one were at Navy, he went down the pit a bit, and then that pit top. And our Johnny, he went down the pit. And my uncles, my brother-in-laws, my dad, all of them were miners except me. My dad, I don't think he wanted me to go there. And I didn't want to, well, I wasn't bothered. I wanted to be a farm labourer, and I went to work for Anna's dad.
Was that your first job?
No, nearly. I went to... there used to be a lorry pick us up. A gang of us up, and we used to go to fields pulling peas and screwing carrots and screwing beetroot and all that. That's what we did. I did it from about August to about Christmas. And then we got to know Annie's dad once. Went to work for Annie's dad for a bit. Yeah.
How old were you then?
15. I'm 73 now. Yeah.
And how long did you work at Annie's dad's?
About 3 years or nearly 3 years. Then they were calling them up for army, they called me up for 2 years. But if I'd have stuck with Annie's dad, farmers could get so many exempt, but not them all. You know, they could get so many off, but not them all. I didn't like army, I wanted to be, I also wanted to be a farmer's lad. Yeah.
Was this national service?
Yeah, 2 years. I went to Catterick. Then I went to Germany, I was in Germany, and I didn't get my first leave to come home for 10 months. My dad died while I was in Germany with a stroke, and they flew me home from Germany to London. And I had to get home best I could from London to Thorn Moran's. Yeah. Then I went back farming after doing the 2 years, Somebody's were at 1955. I was working at roads a bit, and somebody said Moores is a good job, so I went to see about it. Got set on with Stan Marshall. He set me on 21st of September 1955.
Where was that? Swinefleet was that?
Hey,
was that Swinefleet?
No, Thorn Moores. Have you been on Thorn Moores? Yeah. Then later on, I moved to Rawcliffe side. Swinefleet side, yeah.
And so, tell me about what you did when you were working for. Who did you work for?
Oh,
on the moors.
British Moss Litter. They had it, and then they sold it to Pisons in 1963. British Moss Litter. He had it on tools. They owned the peat works. Up comes Fison's, and they bought them out. And they weren't long before, like I said before, a lot of peat went for deep little chicken houses. They used to put in big bales and lats and wires round. Probably weighed 16 tons, weighed a lot anyway. And it had to be dry them days, you had to dry. And it went to bed chickens down, it went to gardens, and it went to Racecourse,
Newmarket.
It went to Newmarket, and bedded these great good horses down with it dry. Then Pisons took over in 1963. They wanted it damp. So instead of digging it out, they had a big machine. Have you seen a big worm, eh? Well, they scraped tough off and took it loose, and they wanted it damp for flowers and tomatoes and that.
But when you first started, what was your job?
Digging peat. What they call graving.
And can you describe it to me? I know you've shown me with...
Yeah.
But can you try and describe it to me, how you did it? How did it work? You'd start off...
We started off from a dike side, and you had tools. Have you seen some of tools? You've seen some of tools, haven't you?
Tell me what tools you'd have.
A knife, what they call a knife, and a spade, and a fork, and a 6 foot staff. So you can measure your chain. You can say you wanted to take a 3 foot cut or a 4 foot six. It had markings on it, 4 foot six, and then you put your line out, nick it, like I said, nick it, take that crust off, and then get underneath. That's what they used to do.
And you
used to do it four foot deep. 22 yards long, and 8 turves deep,
And how wide?
4'6". 4'6" from my boat to that cat. From that line to that cat.
Okay.
4'6". Six
slabs.
Six turfs. Yeah. And you look at you get a Cadbury's bar of chocolate, and just like that.
So you set off front dyke side?
Yeah.
Was it a chain that way then, or was it 4'6" front dyke side?
No. It was a chain this way. That's the cutting you would take. 4'6" were the cutting you were taking out.
Yes.
Six turves wide.
So the chain and the chain, from the dyke.
And you had to do it from 4'6", 4'6" right along for 22 yards, and then you got a chain.
Mm.
But if you took a 3-foot cut instead of the 4'6", you had to do 33 yards per chain, because you wanted wide.
Right. And you'd start off and you'd have all the grass and all the stuff on the top, so what would you do first?
We called it bearing it. There were bracken, heather, anything.
And then would you take that off?
Cut it in different shape, not same, cut it in slabs like that, and get a spade and put it so you could walk on it and keep your turves dry. Are you with me? Yeah.
And then you start cutting down?
Started cutting down, like I said, with them cutters you've got. You showed that cutter line.
There were
better cutters than that. That's somebody's worn that down thin. They were better than that. Cut it like that. 17 mile, they reckon you wanted 17 and a half inches long for a turf, and you wanted 5 for 2 yards. Well, if you were a little man and you wanted strong, you'd have to have a short, an extra cut. See? Again, Nick.
So you're 4'6" wide, and you'd cut across the 4'6".
Yeah.
The length of the 4'6" with your knife.
Yeah. Cut it out to fresh air, because it was down,
And then where did you go?
Used to stand it bottom so you could strike it. There were spades like that. You used to strike it. After you cut it, strike it, and put them on tools and carry them off, like that.
And then
when you got near hand, when you got to the bottom, when you got to the bottom of that 4 foot, these rolls come nearer, so he didn't have to carry them out, he just chucked them on. Are you with me?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then they used to take a spit out called log spitting. And water used to run into the ditch to keep the dry life.
So the log spit, what was that?
I feel sure it was Argos, because
it was an Argos bag.
So when you got to the bottom... Say this... This was done 22 yards long, this here.
Well, I'll ask him it more.
So, it grew in then.
Well, I can ring up.
So you'd have a bulk about 4 foot tall.
Oh, what?
You'd have a wall, wouldn't you, at the side?
About 4 foot high.
About four foot high.
Yeah, right.
Oh, well, I'll have a look at my cupboard.
Right, I've done the chain. There's the bank. And it's down here.
Yeah.
This is all finished, look.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I got there, put the next bit.
Yeah.
So what you did then?
Right.
You got your spade, your knife. Cut right along the side like that.
Yeah.
And 9 inches like that.
Yeah.
Like that. Then you used to nick it.
All right.
And then you used to fetch them out that way.
Right.
Took them onto your rolls.
Probably
about that deep.
About 4 inches?
Yeah. I think it had to be more, really, but they want, you know, 1 inch. And that was called log spitting. And that was where you water to run away.
So right at the bottom of your wall, you'd made like a water channel.
Yeah, that's right, you've got it, yeah. That's for your water to run away, yeah. If it rained a lot, if you didn't do that and it rained a lot, like sometimes went through puddles, you just make a gap and it'll go out of your way, like.
Yeah.
That called log spitting. And when I went on in 1955,
yeah,
when Brian was a few weeks old, that was 2 shilling a chain.
Yeah.
But there's only one spit, there's only a spit.
What do you mean by a spit?
Take a piece out. Yeah, yeah. That, what, the graving when I went on, the chain, all up, 4 foot deep, 4 foot six wide, was £2.17 shilling in 1955, a chain.
Yeah.
And your log spitting, that spit.
No.
Oh yeah, I see.
Or 2 shilling
yeah.
On top of that, that's log spitting. That's log spitting. That's where to get your water, a channel to get your water away.
So they paid you extra for digging the logs for the
oh, 2 shilling a chain.
Oh, right.
Because you want money. You could soon throw, in 5 minutes, you could probably throw a chain of that out. Like, because you're only taking one, you're not going that wide and that deep. You're just going there. Taking a spit out, yeah.
And each turf, how big would that be?
What, you graved?
Yes.
Well, mine, I made them 17.5 inches long, 9 inches wide, and they were supposed to be 6 inches deep, thick. But people didn't get them quite like that. Foremans were flexible, you know what I mean? There were, some of them weren't greedy. If you lost an inch or two, as long as you're making a good job, and it was somewhat light, you know.
So as you're walking along, when you got your flat top, you'd make a cut, the edge of the thing here at your heel, say, and you'd make a cut across the 4 foot six.
Yeah, yeah, right across.
About 17.5 inches.
Then you cut it some more, 17.5 inches.
And you said you measured it with your foot, did you?
Well, I take a size 9, and if you take a size 10, it's a foot.
No, I'm not getting involved with that.
Well, I used to put my foot up like that, and go a bit wider, I guess it like about that.
Yeah.
And if. If you made some shorter lengths, you had to cut extra lengths.
You're still a chain to cut, aren't you?
Yeah, say you had 500 cuts and you made them shorter, you probably want 550. See what I mean? Some little fellas.
So you cut it across these 17 inches apart.
Yeah.
And then,
cut it that way.
And then you cut it at right angles.
Yeah, yeah.
9 inches wide.
Just like a bar of chocolate. Yeah.
9 inches,
yeah.
Yeah. And then the depth you took off at 6 inches with your spade. You chopped that with your spade.
Six inches
deep.
Them turfs, yeah.
So you did your knife, and then your spade.
You got a knife, you had a knife, a spade, and you had a lovely little garden, like a garden spade, to take that log spit out.
Oh, you had a different spade to take the spit out?
But if you were good at your job, you could do it with your own spade. And some old timers, they did it with their own. I didn't know sometimes.
Now, Annie said, drew me a picture of his spade. She said it was like a spade on a playing card.
Yeah.
With a pointy bit.
Yeah. There's a spade. There's a spade. And they're lovely and sharp edges to cut it through, lovely and sharp.
I'll have to ask.
And after they've been worn out, the foreman will bring you a new one, a new spade. Yeah, and I think they're all made at Sheffield, I think.
Hello. I'm sorry about this, I'm taking over.
Right.
Now, you said that you did it the English way.
Yeah.
Tell me how that's different. Tell me what that means.
Well, the Dutch graving were a narrower turf. The English were 9 inches wide. And I think the Dutch, they weren't as wide. Maybe 7 inches, I don't know to be exact. But I've seen them in any straight to them. You just push them and load them on a barrow, then they tip barrow up. Dutch.
I can't remember the Dutch.
Ernest Wraith. He got lessons to do that. And they had like a sticker, I tell you. They didn't use cutters like we.
No.
They had a sticker. And it used to go in about 6 inches, see? And then they take it up with a spade.
So they didn't cut it with a knife? They cut it with
they had a sticker.
Which is like a big.
Last Friday I found one. If you go where these old workings is, you can find things like where they also do it.
So you did the cutting?
Yeah.
And how did that work with your wife?
Well, she used to put them turves in rolls, like I tell you.
And then
she was put like they all are.
So they leant one up against each other?
Yeah, like that. And then they were like that, like I showed you. And then when April comes and it was getting drier, you went English wall and you just got your hands like that. And they fell on the edge like that. You got the next row and put it up top and it made like pigeon holes. And that rocker side, I once found a lovely yellowhammer's nest in between.
I'm going to get a demonstration with socks now.
Yeah, she's showing you like that's how you used to do it like that. Now drop it on its head. Drop them on the edge, Jen, for walling, Annie. Drop it on the
edge. That's how you used to do rows and
yeah,
rows.
So that's the row.
That's the row. Then you used to go like that.
Like that, look.
Then you, off the next lot of turf, next row, you'd do them like that.
Put it on the top.
Yeah. And then you put next one like that, like a little pigeon hole, so it wouldn't got through it.
And then put
and is that walling?
That's walling.
English walling.
Yeah. Another one carrying it off.
Yeah.
And that pyramid. You know that pyramid in?
Yes.
Them turves and pyramid in. 32 in a pyramid. Come to one. You know them wagtail birds?
And then you go a bit high and bit.
Ah, that's it. That's how they do it. But she hadn't enough socks, or she'd have could have come
you know,
here, see?
You'd like bring that that way, and then you'd come next one.
And if
there's a little bit of a hole in there.
And there's some hole for air and that to get.
So
there were them wagtails used to love to get in there and make the nest. Wagtails. Yeah.
So we've had a demonstration with socks. I haven't forgotten.
It was very informative, thank you.
Yeah. It's all machines, you see now, like. Pisces took over in 63.
Yeah. So you did walling and you did built pyramids.
Yeah. She did a lot.
And stacking.
Yeah,
she did a lot. Yeah. Stacking, yeah, then you put them turves round like that. I used to make round stacks sometimes. And you used to chuck turves in the middle.
Yeah.
Your pyramids, chuck them in the middle loose. To keep dry and you fetch them up like that if it come out of rain they kept dry.
How did you get it from the pyramid to the stacks? Did you use barrows?
Yeah.
Like that one which I showed you on that picture.
Yeah. You used to use barrows, flat barrows with wooden wheels with a rim round. That's it.
So you were a really efficient working team then, the two of you?
Oh yeah.
Oh you fell out because I never had rows straight.
When I'm digging it out, sometimes she'd get too far that front and then I had to chuck them round bloody corner.
So that was because she maybe
had a rose wide like that. And if you have your rose like that, you get beyond the digger. You had to keep them narrow and then the digger could chuck them that way like.
So it was easier having a team rather than...
It just depends. It just depends. It was all right. Yeah.
And how many chains? How long would it take to do a chain usually? How long would you expect to take to do a chain?
It just depends. It were a skilled job. It just depends how strong you are, and you have to have a good back and all. And that. Did you remember Cyril Thedford?
Yeah.
He'd been dead, and his wife Elsie helped him, and he had a corset round him because he had a bad back. I don't know how he did it. He wore a corset. He must have been a bloody hero, because that wasn't the job for anybody with a bad back.
Yeah. But I mean, you got paid piecework per chain.
Piecework. If it chucked it down with rain, say it was 11 o'clock in the morning and it sailed down on your bikes and your home. It were up to you to do a bit more for a rainy day, do you know what I mean? Piecework.
So how long would it say? I know it would vary according to the ground, but would it be a chain a week, a chain a day?
No, a lot of people did 3/4 of a chain every day. That's 3/4 of a chain, about 17 yards. And if you were strong and you were a bit wild, well, you could do chain like, you know what I mean?
Now, obviously, it varied what the ground was like as to how quick you could get your
chain. It depends on peat and all. Sometimes you've got some bad peat.
They were raggy,
weren't
they?
Yeah, there were some of it, and probably settled. It was like hitting a ball of rag, what we call it, rag. And I'm sometimes hitting it at your knee, where it angles at your knee, with rag bouncing back, rag. And then you got some what were like really gold, it was beautiful.
It's like butter.
Aye. It was brown on top, yellow in the middle, wasn't it?
Yeah,
and black up
bottom. Yeah.
But if you got some of that really good soft yellow, that could even really butter. Yeah,
did you cut right down to the black?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. I reckon when them moors first started, I reckon it were 8'6" deep right across. Well, you went and took, say, 4 foot off it, so that left another 4'6", didn't it? And then they had another little cutting line. But
could you tell what the land was, what the peat was like before you'd start cutting it?
Oh yeah.
So if
yeah, because like a Sid Hill and one or two. If they thought, if you're near a wood side and it were all woody and all that, Sid Hill and one or two more, I've seen them go home earlier. Instead of just getting out this flat to get ready to go in another one, I've seen them leave a bit in and go home early. So you'll get that rough. Are you with me?
Yeah.
So you'll get that rough area.
Yeah. So when you'd finished, you moved on beyond the where they were working now to the next bit?
Yeah. You move further up, yeah.
So could you say if you thought that it was not going to be a very nice piece, that you didn't want to do that one, that piece?
Oh, you had to do it. You had to do it. A fair man took it as it come, but you always got, wherever you go, you always get some of these old times. A lot of them, not just a lot of them, you'd think, oh, that's a bad one. I'm going to have early day, I'm hanging back. And then these young ones would go in and get egg it, and then he'd come in and get what he wanted, and he wouldn't have to work as hard. Oh, they were crafty, some of them were.
Mm.
Yeah, they were.
And foreman used to be that, was he there all the time?
No. He knew you probably were in the length where he had it in his books. That area, they're all 12. Chain long. That area, there was 12 chain long. If you done half of it, he know you already done 6. When you complete, he know he got his book. You done 12. He stand by so that good at that. He knew he could go to away a bit like and then come back. He knew how many were in that flat, how much were in it. Say 12, and he didn't get 12 while it was finished.
Mm.
If 6 were halfway,
mm.
And he just had it in his book. Mm. Oh, you've just done that, have you? Oh, it's in my book, 12. Oh, you're in here now, are you? These are 14 chain long. Well, put that 14 chain down when you finished it. And if you left and went somewhere, and he'd measure, if you left and you went, and you did half of it, he'd put 7, there's 7 more to do, and another fellow would do that other 7.
And he said that he was very fair sometimes.
Yeah, he was alright last time. Yeah, he was. He knew his job. He knew his job. He knew his job. There were lots of things. You see, when you're on them moors, and a fire were coming across, quite wide. Well, the experienced man like Stan Marshall and one or two more, they get to a dike here, set it afire, and he'd go and meet that and push it out. Now you with me?
Yeah.
It was coming across all there, all fire, all coming across. The redite there, they set that a fire, and they come and burn themselves out. If he didn't do that, it'd jump and go miles and burn a lot more.
Uh-huh.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
I know that. Stan, he didn't like fires, Stan. He didn't like fires. because if it burnt a lot of stuff, he were in trouble, wasn't he, like?
And did you get a lot of fires?
Years ago, they got a lot of fires, but I think I was telling you a bit since. They don't get as many fires now because the conservationist has stopped filled the dikes in and stopped the water running off. And you've got pockets and pockets here, there, with water, with that cotton grass. And it's getting damp now like it was 100 years ago. And if you get fires now, they only go so far because it's all wet. But when you're going back 14, 50 years ago, it were all dry and it could take the lot.
Because the fires that I hear about, they seem to be quite big ones.
Oh, they take the lot, but they'll not get the fires now. They'll not get the fires now, nowhere near like they used to do. Every summer, fires were going, but they're not now because the conservationists have stopped the water running off the moors and you've got it flooded here, there and everywhere. And as soon as a fire hit that, it stops. Mm. I think them moors were better than ever because all these bog plants will come back because it's all wet. So it's all wet now. And there's a plant on there called a flycatcher, I've seen it. There's one called Adder's Tongue, I've seen it. I think there's one called Andromeda. It's it's just like asbestos sheeting.
And you mentioned snakes, didn't you?
Oh yeah, and there used to be a lot of men and women working on them moors, a lot, all over. There's nobody on now. Only a couple of conservationists. Well, men.
And you're Brian.
Yeah, men. Men were going, when they were going on in summer, I've seen them kill as many as 11 snakes. And when a snake used to come out of undergrowth, hot summer's day, and lay on a path, they used to be like the basket sun. They used to come out of heather and bracken and get up bare path and lay it sun. And you used to run over them with your push bike, you used to run over them with your motorbike. Men going to work and coming home from work, oh, there's one there, bang, bang, bang. They were killing them and they were keeping them down. For years now, there hasn't been anybody hardly on them moors. Them snakes will be multiplying. Mm-hmm. It'll not be fit to go on them moors. Mm-hmm. And recently, I've heard that two dogs have been nipped, swell up.
Mm-hmm. Nearly. Little
coat
walls
have,
and there'd be one underneath.
Oh, aye. So how did you manage when your wife stopped going on?
Yeah. Well, do it yourself. Most of them did it themselves. The only one or two put the wives on. Only one or two.
And when did you actually stop digging by hand?
When you retired, weren't you? When they finished your...
Early 80s.
84,
were it? We got redundant in 83. September the 30th, 83. And you could say up to 1980. There would be 1980, there might have been a couple doing it, that's all. Let's see. In the 60s, there were quite a bit done with that, like.
So they brought, when did they bring machines on?
Well, Pfizer took over that bad winter, 1963. It was a bad winter, Pfizer bought it out off at British Moss Liberty. And what were we going to say? What were your question?
When did they start bringing machinery on?
Oh, that way. Pfizer took over in 63, spring 63, and it would be September 63, 6 months, they'd only be, came...
Uncle Herbert.
No, brother, Peter.
Pete Barnett, yeah.
Pete, near Flory Linley's farm, up the Barker's farm at that corner, there were a German... Fetched a German machine and he learnt Pete Barney odd one or two out to drive a machine, and there were a cutting machine, first cutting machine, September 63, and Pete Barney drove it, and then they did it for a good few years, and then they thought of they started to worm it up loose, didn't they? Started to worm it up loose and it did away with a lot. Because they didn't want it dry. They didn't want it dry. They only wanted it dry when it was with Newmarket for stables and chicken houses. But when Pfizer took over, they introduced that grow bag. That grow bag. And that made them, well, made them a lot of money.
So what difference did it make to you? How did it affect you when they brought machinery in?
Well, you used to do different jobs like that. There were a lot of that sorrel. There's a plant on there, sorrel. There's me and Claudie spraying with a tank on his back, killing that sorrel weed. Because they were getting a lot of peat back. They was getting a lot of peat back. Growers in these big greenhouses were sending something because it had that weed in, the sorrel. And so me and Claudia was spraying it with spray to kill it. And that's when that happened. Mm.
But you carried on digging by hand?
No. Eh?
Did you say you carried on digging by hand right until the 8th?
About 1980. But not much past there. And it was done.
So that's working alongside them digging by
hand? Yeah, it worked along. Yeah, they were experimenting with them cutting machines. Right. They didn't go straight in. They didn't go straight in. And then your uncle Herbert drove one of them things, didn't he? Mm.
So was it that they gradually increased the amount that was machined and so
on? Oh, they did. They murdered it. Stan Marshall told bosses, he says, where you're going, there'll be no Pete Upmores. They were murdering it. They were getting locked. They were greedy. They were getting locked. They were going right down to... On that moors... If you get every bit of peat off, it's just like Bert Russell's farmland, soil underneath, under that peat. Mm. And peats, you reckon peats form with a lot of wet weather and in wet boggy land, and a moss grows.
Hello.
And then another moss on top of it, compact. And that's how peats form, they reckon. Mm. Yeah. Take all that peat up at Moors, and it's just like you can make a decent farmland if you wanted to.
Because you were thinking, I was thinking that they introduced machinery in '60s and what have you, and then that would automatically all the hand digging would stop. But you're saying that.
Just went on maybe another 4 years, and they gradually faded out and did something else.
All right.
Like chopping trees up and but they wanted more and more peat off, so they made a big boom with a machine with a big boom on, and men were chucking them on this boom and it was going into wagons and they couldn't get enough, they were taking it away. Mm-hmm. Conservationists complained, which you couldn't blame them really, they were being too greedy, they were. Yeah.
Have they started surface milling when you were still working for them?
Have they started what?
Did they start surface milling while you were still working there?
What do you mean, that loose stuff, don't you? Yeah. Oh, yeah, for years, yeah. Yeah. I remember H. Eastwood, he was a foreman, and when it was going at its peak, he said Pisons were making 300% profit, taking that much off. They're just going in there, yeah. You've seen them, have you seen them levellers?
Mm.
Level it all loose, go in machines and take it all away. They were murdering it. Where our hands used to just cut it with hand and keep, and then take time. When you move from earlier, it had time to build up, but it didn't have time when Pisons were greedy, it didn't have time to build up. Mm. But the conservationists were on the back then for all time then, right?
Mm.
Mm.
Well, thank you very much.
Right.
Before I finish, now I understand that you were one of the last gravers.
One of them. Who else? One of them.
Where was the last hand graving done then?
Thornmoors, Thornmoors, near the pit tip. Mm.
And that was when did you say you retired? You made redundant.
83. 83. Well, I think I was 50 then.
Mm.
So I got a job on. What did I do? I did a bit of gardening, like, and then I got my name on bins. And I were on there a bit.
Mm. So it was in 83 they did the last hand graving, did they?
80, we'll say 80. 80.
Right, thank you very much.
Yeah.